Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gorbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in, listeners.
And back with us today, Senator Dan McKay on the right. Hi, Senator. And you're looking tan from the golf course, so nice to have you back.
Why do you got to be like that, Natalie? I'm just trying to fly low-key. I'm just relaxing a little bit.
Well,
it's good to see everybody.
Yeah, you were missed. We had Senator Wyler. He did a nice job filling in. But let's talk about some more Biden administration news. Vaccine intellectual property waiver. Looks like the Biden administration is going to back the idea of an IP waiver after they got pressure from the World Health Organization. So with all the federal funding, why wasn't there a waiver to begin with, Dan?
Yeah, that's exactly the question I want to know is, how can you have this much public money dedicated to something and then there be a question as to whether or not there's a waiver? So, yeah, this should be a public domain project, and hopefully this gets done that way so that people, I mean, we're already seeing issues with the vaccines that were created in other countries. You know, Europe is struggling a little bit with at the AstraZeneca vaccine. And so I think that is a no-brainer, and hopefully everybody in the world will be able to kind of kick this thing's butt once we get these things distributed throughout the world.
Shireen, get me right. If it's, is it World Trade Organization or the World Health Organization that's involved when it comes to intellectual property waivers?
So I'm not sure that I know. I think it is the World Trade Organization.
Okay.
But this is also a plea that's coming from the WHO. And I would just say that there's a real interesting line here, because in the United States, there's a lot of federal money that goes into the development and advancement in the medical field in particular. So I'm wondering, Dan, if you feel like there's a line there, like at what point, when should we have greater access, or when should the public have greater access to these things that we're often funding?
Yeah, I'm not terribly sure where that line is, right? I mean, we constantly want to ask that line. You always want to make sure you're balancing the desire to innovate and profit from your innovation, right? So there's that part of it. And then the other part of it that you're obviously trying to balance is, my goodness, people need, you know, whatever health device or whatever health initiative it is, like a vaccine or that kind of thing. And so how do you weigh those two goods against each other? But I'm one that has watched intellectual property law and just wondered if we haven't evolved into a dangerous area where we're overprotecting things sometimes.
I might be with you there.
Hey, but Shireen and Dan, all of this comes down to things about how you define the role of government. And I mentioned before the show that I wanted to talk to Shireen and Dan about the return of big government. And Shireen, we'll start with you first. But if I were just to set it up, I mean, I thought that the Biden administration would be viewed largely as just this transitional administration moving away from Trump to what's next. Instead, it seems very transformational. It seems like it's the return of big government. And this is, you know, sort of surprising to me, because it's as if we're reimagining the role of government in American life.
I think it's beyond time that we reimagine the role of government in people's lives. And I'll say one of the things that really struck me running for Congress and traveling, you know, in many corners of the state, and in particular, really red corners of the state, when we think about even what ranching looks like in this state, or when we think about our, you know, veteran services, or we think about people getting their Medicare checks, people like big government when it works. What they don't like is dysfunctional government that creates a lot of hassle in their life. And I am just deeply tired, I think, of the fascination that we have with Ronald Reagan, who really brought, you know, forward a form of government to me that was deeply destructive and re-entrenched, I would say, many of the challenges that we're continuing to grapple with when it comes to equity across our communities. So, you know, I know that a lot of Republicans like to say, well, I'm a Reagan Republican, like I'm the bedtime for Bonzo Republican guy, not what, you know, Trump brought forward. But when we think about really that attitude about government, what it perpetuated, I think, was a disinvestment in many of the core things that we're lagging in now. When we think about the quality of our education compared to other countries, when we think about healthcare, housing, infrastructure, we are behind. And I'm excited for an opportunity for us to really step forward and really continue to be a global power that has the kind of infrastructure that people deserve.
Dan, I know you'll see it differently, but I saw an NBC News poll that...
What? What are you talking
no,
about?
No, you will, because I saw a poll that was basically, you know, should government do more? And Democrats, 82%, Independents, 60%, and Republicans, 23%. So there's clearly a real difference in ideologically how, you know, the parties see the role of government. And how are you viewing this return to big government that appears that Biden's part of the making of?
Oh, boy. Shireen said so many objectionable things to my personal constitution that I'm like, I feel like I should curl up in the fetal position and just like cry.
You can, and I'll keep going.
I know. I'm certain you will. Unfortunately for you, the more you say, it doesn't actually sell it. So the biggest problem is that government for enforced equity, right? Like, which is constantly what you hear from folks is we need more equality. We need more equality of X, Y, and Z. And when you get forced equality, what you end up getting is the opposite of equality. You end up highlighting inefficiencies throughout the process, and those inequalities double down. But that's not the question you asked. Natalie, the biggest problem with bigger government is the more the government like pushes things into your regular world, the more the government kind of takes over. And I will say government is not as good at running your life or helping you with things or doing things as you would be to your neighbor, and is not as efficient certainly as it is for you to your neighbor. And so the constant, you know, desire for government to take over is really an interesting phenomena that really is only happening in the urban parts of the country, because you get away off of the urban parts of the country and you really have a real strong push of government stay away. I want my space with your tax rates, with your offers, with your cert, you know, all those things, and want their distance. And I am fearful, yeah, honestly, that we get so deep, we can't come back.
Dan, part of the problem I see, and Shireen, I want you to weigh in here, but it used to be that Republicans really were for small government, but we watched with the Trump tax cuts, I'll just call them that. I remember Mitch McConnell saying that he was convinced that these tax cuts would be revenue neutral, and the federal budget deficit, you know, during the Trump administration before COVID went from $439 billion to $984 billion. And so I feel like what we've lost is a Republican Party that actually is effective at keeping government small. And Dan's nodding. Shireen?
Well, I would agree with that. And I do think that I would recommend to listeners, if you haven't had a chance to listen to Heather McGee talk about her recent book, The Sum of Us. I've been spending some time with this book, and I'm really enjoying the historical context of when we really did invest in the middle class, when we invested in kind of growing families, working families in this country. And when our, you know, she's looking at it from a racial lens, but when we had a lot of white working class families, there was a greater in circling of the wagons to really invest in structures that supported the middle class. And what we've seen over the last 40 years is a real disinvestment there. And this country will be stronger when we have better schools, good jobs, people who are educated and grown in communities where they're healthy enough, for example, to serve in our military. Right now, only 27% of people in this country who are eligible to serve or to enlist in the military are even eligible, because we have so many people who are sick, who are undernourished, who cannot read at an eighth grade level. We have major problems. We need to address them.
How did we get better service in the the online market world, right? How do we get those things? Amazon is a private industry, right? You got private UPS, private FedEx. They've even created their own shipping organization. The only thing, I mean, in some ways that you can look at it, the government provides is, you know, the idea, you know, they have real estate incentives. I'm not going to deal with those things. Those are states making bad decisions. I'd say, though, the roads underneath them, right? And that's honestly, I think, the analogy we should be looking at for how we plan for success as a people and how we plan for success for a country. It's fine if the government provides the avenues for success. But by the time they remove the desire to move further down the road and continue to grow by just providing it, the less happy people are going to be with the system, and the less happy people, or the less likely people are going to be willing to work hard to succeed. And you actually see this over and over and over again. Venezuela should be one of the wealthiest countries, and they should have the most successful people because of all their natural resources and other things that they have going for them as a country. And yet in the 80s and 90s, when they started to slip further and further away from free markets and slip further and further into government providing stuff, I'm telling you, they went backwards, and now they're trying to dig their way out, and it is almost impossible. It's that age-old adage, you vote your way into socialism, and then you have to fight your way out of it.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part, is when you look back at what we're constantly trying to do to level the playing field or wherever it might be, all you're doing is removing the game.
But then when we look to what your party actually did when they had full power at the federal level, what they did was they gave the rich more money with the Trump tax cuts. That's a problem. We have to have middle ground here. There has to be investment in everyday working people in this country.
I'm Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourvani and Dan McKay. In our next segment, we'll talk about Representative Liz Cheney being pushed out of her leadership role in Congress. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourvani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we are going to talk about Liz Cheney, who, is she like the third ranking House Republican? She was one of 10 Republican Congress members who voted to impeach Trump earlier this year. But she made the mistake, Dan, of fist bumping President Biden after his address to Congress last week. And that's not her only failing, but it seems to have been erupting because of that.
And, you know, it's so weird that there's so much symbolism in, you know, a fist bump or whatever it is. Like, if you go
during a pandemic when we're not shaking hands.
Yeah. Go back and look at the president, Ronald Reagan. We talked about him earlier. Look at him walking into the House chambers, right? You have both sides of the aisle greeting him, right? And, you know, and this is just right after the Walter Mondale election, where they completely obliterated the Democrats in that race. You know, rest in peace, Walter. I'd say that in that, though, everybody's shaking everybody's hands. Not a big deal. Why is a fist bump? So I don't know. But honestly, a fist bump or, you know, high five Kathleen Reby, who, you know, in the Senate is probably one of my favorite Democrats to beat on.
So but she's in trouble for other reasons, is she not, Dan?
Well, you know, when you want to be in leadership, right, there is a sensitivity to kind of the global party, right? And AOC and the squad, so to speak, if you look back a few years ago, you know, after they first got elected, you know, they were, you know, this kind of big up and coming thing, and they still kind of are, but you see that the party has kind of pushed them to the side and not making them the rallying cry. Not in a bad way. It just kind of happens as the national party starts to kind of coalesce about where their message is going to be. And the same thing's happening with Liz Cheney. She just happens to be in House leadership, so it's higher profile.
Shireen, I do like your point, though, because she is basically taking on the big lie, and it gets her in trouble. And
I want
you to expand on that just a little bit more, because I saw Congressman Blake Moore. I really respect him. He's doing a nice job. He would be our newest congressman, if I've got that right. But I saw him present to a group, and I'm really impressed with him. I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. But in the final analysis, I actually felt bad because of the games that you have to play to survive in the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, I think there are some interesting games you have to play to survive in Congress. I mean, certainly we have Burgess Owens, Chris Stewart, who have, I think, in more vocal ways participated in the big lie that we saw Donald Trump moving through this country after he denied the election results. But I think that there's something kind of more troubling that might be the Utah Republican Party. And I'm curious about the reactions that you both have to what happened at the convention this weekend.
Well,
I just love that everybody's calling it the big lie, which is like the title of a book by Dinesh D'Souza about like the left, you know, the left being based on, you know, the Nazis, right? So super interesting that everybody's like owning that, because I did see that everybody was talking about the big lie, and that became one of the trending topics, and that his book is actually selling again, which is kind of ironic that, yeah, you know, but anyways,
well,
don't cross your party. That's just it.
But Dan, Shireen's, she's posed the question about the GOP convention this past Saturday. What Governor Cox...
Speaking of crossing your party.
Yeah, Governor Cox and Mitt Romney both were greeted with boos. Romney narrowly avoided a censure vote. Cox found himself standing up in front of his party as the... I don't know, I think of the governor as the chief of the party. He's asking for them to you know, spend more time volunteering, come together. He has this stellar record with the economy, with COVID, and they're still giving him a very, you know, tepid response. People yelled at Romney that he was a traitor and a communist. I mean, he was our nominee to the Republican president spot. Dan, I think it's, I think it's really unfortunate. And I think the Republican Party's in a mess.
Well, I will just say that every political party is always a mess, and they are always a hot mess. And anytime you get a bunch of people in a room and, you know, they start to see synergy and all that, their opinions, and one guy starts to boo and then another dude starts to boo. And then I will say it was dudes for the most part. I did not see a lot of women objecting for that purpose, but I was there, and there were people that were frustrated. I thought Senator Romney handled it awesomely, because it was almost like he knew he was going to get booed.
I'm sure
in
he
some
did.
Ways.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah. Like, he knew it was coming, and he knew there was, you know, there were people with him that were frustrated. It reminds me of this funny, I mean, our listeners will appreciate it if they're Seinfeld nerds, but Jerry Seinfeld, you know, tanks a set. His comedy set, because the guy after him is benefiting from Jerry being so funny. And so Jerry totally tanks this set. And in some ways, Mitt Romney comes out and just like asks, "So what do you think of Biden?" And it was really funny. I was laughing because I'm like, seriously, he's asking that? Like, it seems weird. It was not a Mitt Romney way to start a speech usually. But anyway, I thought he handled it well. But, you know, the one thing I'll say, it's very funny when we're in a weird situation or we're in a weird place in American history where expressing your opinion to an elected leader, good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, I've been booed. I've been told I'm crazy. I've been told I can't say the words, but go on Twitter, you know, and search for McKay. It'll show you some great things about myself. I learned a lot by myself in that forum. But, you know, I just tell you, like, I hear everything, and if you were to take all the stuff I took on that I say on Twitter, that stuff blows away what Mitt Romney was treated at convention. And yet you have all these fake people objecting, you know, to how Mitt Romney was treated. It's like, crap, we're all treating each other like garbage. Why should Mitt Romney be any different?
Yeah. Shireen, I'll make a prediction to you, and that is that the Republican Party starts having financial troubles within the next 6 months.
Oh, I'm curious about that. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, I'm sure you would.
Well, it's just this notion that with this much dysfunction and with new leadership that maybe doesn't have the relationships and experience that the past had, that, you know, the donors that hold it up won't be there for them.
Can you tell me, I've been curious about the censure vote. What are the consequences of that? I mean, that was a close vote. What happens if you are censured? And really, does Senator Romney care? I mean, it doesn't look good, but are there any real consequences?
No, there's none.
I think it's all public message, right? It gets on It gets on the cable news network that, you know, Utah Republicans censured the junior senator. And, and it's just political games.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. I mean, that was why it eventually like lost, is everybody saying, you know, this is inconsequential. It doesn't matter. It's interesting, Shireen. I'm not going to, for the sake of our listeners, I'm not going to tell you the current balance sheet of the Utah Democratic Party But I do not revel in the fact that they're not doing well financially either. But that said, the Republican Party may not, you know, be perfect. But the new chair that was elected, we got our whole leadership team is a group of millennials. How come that's not the story coming out of conventions? We have none of the stodgy old Republican leadership that everybody's come to think is a Republican. Instead, we got a whole bunch of millennials. We got a bunch of new lifeblood in the party. We've got, you know, Blake Moore, who's a bright, shining star. We've got a young insurgence within the party. And yet everybody's talking about how we're treating Mitt Romney. It really is quite tragic. But hopefully we'll get past that soon. I really do think I think the future's bright.
Shireen, let's go to you first on this one. We had First Lady Jill Biden visiting our state this week. She went to Glendale Middle School, which is in one of Utah's most diverse neighborhoods. She's a teacher by profession. What did you think of her visit?
So I think it's exciting when we have people at that level of our government coming to visit. But one of the things that I thought was really exciting about this is it was highlighting a shift that we're seeing around vaccine deployment and availability in our communities. So we're seeing more pop-up events. You no longer have to schedule. There are multiple opportunities across this valley, including in West Valley City, in Salt Lake City, where the Mountain America Center is still happening in Sandy. You can schedule there. But there are a lot of walk-in appointments available, and that is wonderful. And I also heard our governor say that at this point, if you've got a business or a group that gathers and you are looking for someone to come and help, distribute the vaccine in that vein, that can also happen. But I know that she was, in one of our more diverse schools and also highlighting this new approach to vaccine deployment. And I think it's exciting to have her here.
Yeah, I think it's always great when we get national leaders visiting our state, and she's
same
an impressive
here.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, same here.
Dan, you're in real estate. This is more residential real estate, but the Gardner Institute analyzed UtahRealEstate.com data show a not surprising but a record 27% spike in Utah housing prices. It's getting really rough. Because it's an affordability challenge, and it's really hard on young households and on people who are trying to move up and create an ownership society for themselves.
And, you know, the scary thing is, and somebody talked to me about this actually today, they said, well, you know, real estate developers are now making more money than ever before when they hear that 30% increase, right? And when really you're actually seeing, you know, 27% on average for home prices when you saw material costs at the same time going up like 35%. So what you're hearing is the margins are on, you know, home building and all those other things, which is 26-ish, you know, it might be as much as 30 now, but, you know, 25 to 30% of our economy in the state of Utah is dependent on, you know, on construction jobs. And when you see compression from costs and from, you know, and values, there's a problem. I mean, hopefully we'll get a fix to this by the fall is what everybody's saying economically. Cross our fingers. Yeah.
Shireen, we're actually seeing contractors who are pulling out of their contracts. You know, they have a clause to get out, and the prices have gone up so high that they've lost their margin.
Yeah, this is a real disaster. And I think, saying that it will be maybe resolved by the fall feels deeply optimistic to me when I think about just the pure supply and demand issue that we're having here in this valley. There is a lot of ground to make up in terms of housing, and I hope that we're really focused on that.
Yeah. Dan, we've heard word now that there will be a special session. I'm hearing May 19th. Is that the date that's being shared? It will be to deal with the stimulus funds and for our state. Is there any news for our listeners to share there? Senator Wyler did not know anything about it. I hope Todd's listening. He just kind of brushed it off.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know a little bit, but honestly, the how and what is going to be funded will be, you know, very interesting. Stay tuned, because
yeah,
it's still yet to be figured out.
So, Shireen, we're talking about, you know, over $1 billion. I think it's 1.6 or something, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah,
and
it
we've talked to two senators and they don't seem to know what's coming. What's the public supposed to do if the senators don't know? So, Shireen, I'm kind of giving you a leading question there.
So I have some ideas there. Yeah, I have some ideas there. I think it's really important for people to engage their representatives, especially at this point of the year. People get really excited when we head into session. And at that point, I know that you, Dan, and others are just buried in emails. Now is a great time to develop those relationships with your representative, your senator. You can go to le.utah.gov, put in your address, and you can find out who those people are. And email them now and let them know what priorities you would like to see. Get on their mailing list to understand what's happening and how you can lobby for the things that you care about, whether that's investments in small businesses, rent relief, bigger investments in infrastructure. Let them know now.
Hey, I just got an email asking for a special session to get rid of masks in schools. So I think the listeners are hearing you, Shireen.
I'm not powerful.
Hey, we're down to just about 30 seconds in the program. I wanted to give each of you a chance to talk about the Wolverine sighting on Antelope Island. This is great stuff. Usually these elusive animals you don't see unless you're at higher elevations, but we've got one that found the island in the sea. Dan?
Yeah, that freaked me out a little bit. I'm not going to lie. Wolverines are not like, that's not like I'm one of my animals I want to meet in a dark place.
Shireen?
I'm into Wolverine, both the comic book character and the one that's on the island.
And I love Wolverine and Big Cottonwood Canyon. Hike it all summer long. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I've been with Senator Dan McKay and Shireen Gourbani. The program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.